The Justin Robert Young Podcast is brought to you, as always, by Patreon.com/JURY. Go ahead and support this show. Not only do you get 3 days a week now of politics, but you also you get Jury. You get my one mic show. That's the only one that you pay for. You know, you pay for that one. I mean, I guess you could assume that you pay for any one of them. You could just pay for the Monday show. You could pay for the Tuesday show, or the I don't do a Tuesday show. Not for this one. Anyway, here, listen, guys, just go over there. If you want to give me money, that's fine. Cool. If you don't, tell a friend. You know, tell a friend, telegraph, tell your mom. Patreon.com/JURY. But you want to know what? Enough talking about how we do the show. What do you say we go ahead and do the show?
Politics.
Holy crap, guys. I went to this thing last night. Welcome. It's the Politics program. This is the September 23rd edition of the program. We are only 3 days away from the most watched debate of all time. So we get two more shows. We got this show and the Monday show before the debate. I'm going to let you guys know now. You will be able to engage with me during the debate, not only on my Twitter, but also on the contenders' Twitter. So go ahead and follow at Contender Game. On Monday, we will be doing all the best Twitter coverage right there. We're going to have our own little watch party there at Contender HQ here in Oakland, California. So get ready for that. I am going to seal in an envelope my prediction of what will happen during this debate. Because I read an article today, and I am almost positive that I know what could be the most defining moment of the debate itself, but quite possibly one of the most memorable moments in debate history. I will predict it for you here today on the show. We are also going to talk about Palmer Luckey, erstwhile Oculus Rift founder, and I guess, I don't even know what you would call him, his relationship to Trump fandom. The money man? He's a money man, Broden. I don't know. I don't. All right, but we'll get into it. Palmer Luckey's giving money to people who support Trump and want to do Pepe memes. We're also going to talk about finally Anthony Weiner. Man, he refuses to be tamed, and he has finally broken through. The Trump campaign has finally commented on Anthony Weiner. Not quite what I would have wanted or expected. We'll get into that. And we are going to find out what Donald Trump and Dwayne Wade have in common. Donald Trump and Dwayne Wade. They're going to have something very, 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 very much in common by next week. And you are going to find out what that is. Can you tell that I'm getting better at radio teases? Can you feel the power? There's going to be a lot of wrestling references on this show. I'm just going to let you guys know. Somebody count it out. Follow me on Twitter at Justin R. Young if you can count all of the wrestling references that are made both visually and in audio cues. And we'll figure something out. I'll give you a sticker pack. Okay. So real quick, I'm just going to, little editor's note. I was out late last night, so I don't know if I'm going to have the energy. I don't know if I'm going to have the energy to do the pole dance. We're going to see if I can get, I can muster up the energy to do the pole dance a little bit later in the program. But I went to this really cool thing. It's called Speakeasy in San Francisco. You can go, I think it's speakeasysf.com. It's an immersive theater experience. It takes you about, I think, 3 hours, 4 hours to do. It's super fun. Flies by, but basically puts you in a 1922 speakeasy. It's a very specific night in history, as you wind up finding out a little later. But you follow actors around, and it's great. It's well done. They sing, they dance, they slap each other. But also they serve alcohol, because the whole point is that you're in, oh, it's a devilish devil's spirit. You're drinking all night. And you, too, are a method actor as an extra in this glorious spectacle as you get too drunk on a weekday night, whilst everybody around you is just, talking about how the reason why the temperance movement sprung up was so lazy roustabouts wouldn't spend all their hard-earned money on booze. And you're like, ha, 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 ha. Oh, what a weird overreaction in American history. Sure, I'd like another $12 Negroni. Please, can you get me another one? Just keep them coming. So I don't know whether or not I'm going to have the energy. And I'm not going to lie to you. Some of the research that I had to do for this show has sucked a little bit out of me, because we're going to get into this Palmer Luckey thing. Palmer Luckey, if you aren't unfamiliar with Palmer Luckey, you don't know who the hot hell Palmer Luckey is. He is a founding figure in the modern era of virtual reality, and really one of the first people to reintroduce virtual reality in a legitimate sense to the modern culture. He founded a company called Oculus Rift. They had a very successful Kickstarter. They then sold that company to Facebook. And, you know, I would say 2 years ago was probably when I was going to the VRLA down there in Los Angeles. And Oculus was the standard, you know. The VR is in a very, very interesting and exciting place. And he, you owe him a lot of credit for it, his company. Sold to Facebook for $2 billion. One Instagram, as we call it in the industry. And by the industry, I mean the business. He made personally about $700 million. Now, apparently, now gird yourself here, folks. Palmer Luckey has political opinions. What? Palmer Luckey has personal opinions about politics. Huh. Oh, that's crazy, huh? I mean, I know I have personal opinions about politics. I mean, do you? We're going to get real Dora the Explorer here. I'm just going to look awkwardly at the camera. Do you have political opinions? Great. Of course you do. You're watching or you're listening to a politics podcast. Of course, it probably stands to reason that you have your own opinions on how things are going to go. Palmer Luckey does similarly. He's also got $700 million and he's like in his mid-20s. His political opinion is that he doesn't like Hillary Clinton and he wishes that Donald Trump were to be our next president. Now, I don't know if he has personally donated to the Trump campaign, if he has bought into one of those blue plate dinners that, you got to kick in a bunch of money for the cause. I don't know whether or not he has funded a super PAC wherein television ads and flyers and volunteers can be run in the effort to support Donald Trump. Because the only thing that I know is that he has supported something called Nimble America, an organization, a 501c3 organization. Actually, no, it's not a 501c3. It's a nonprofit that is designed, and this is in their own words, to bringing the meme magic to the real world. Shitposting in real life. If you aren't familiar with these terms, the term shitposting is the nomenclature within the Reddit community. On Reddit, there are, by and large, two kinds of posts. There are posts wherein you give factual information, you are relaying an article that you have found, you are providing proper citation, you have done a little bit of homework. Or they're shitposting. Shitposting is what happens when you just write some stuff. And often it's funny, and often it's interesting, but nobody would ever consider it to be informative. I think that might be a fair way to categorize what shitposting is. So what he and, well, apparently this had already been a thing. Nimble America had already been a thing. He wanted to give more money to this organization that was looking to bring Trump memes into the real world, buying and selling T-shirts. One of their biggest accomplishments was getting on one of those digital billboards outside of Pittsburgh with a Hillary Clinton caricature that said, "Too big to jail." So what they wanted to do was incentivize people to continue to make memes that they could then take out into the world. Now, much like all Reddit circle jerks, there are many, many, many facets to this particular story. And I will summarize them as briefly as possible without getting into the weeds. Number one, this organization sought to fundraise within the biggest Trump subreddit, which is reddit.com/r/the_Donald. They unfortunately failed to realize that this is Reddit, and Reddit does not like anything involving money. They don't like advertising. They don't like handing over money. They don't like charity. There is nothing involved with the transaction of 1 cent going from one side of the aisle to another that Reddit in general, as a basic rule, is very comfortable with. So they started attacking these guys. This fundraising plea, for which Palmer Luckey apparently was going to match. He was going to do a matching offer. This is very common in nonprofits, that you try to fundraise in a very limited window of time, 24 hours, 48 hours, and whatever comes in, we've got a donor that will do a matching offer. In fact, it's a very effective way to get donations to nonprofits, is you go to people and say, "Hey, we would love it if you would do a matching offer up to X." So, like, let's say earmark $5 million, right? And say, we won't say how much, but we'll encourage people to do it. And then if people raise more than that, you go back to them and say, "Hey, look, they wound up raising $3 million more. Could you peel off that other $3 million?" So then this is Palmer Luckey, after being scorned by the Reddit community that they were sprung from, they go and talk to the Daily Beast and a few other things to detail what's happening. Now, immediately, of course, you've got a lot of people that are grossed out by Palmer Luckey. But I don't know how much more grossed out they would be if he just came out and said, "I'm a Trump supporter." If they just came out and said, or if he just came out and said, "I think Hillary Clinton's a terrible person and shouldn't be president." Like, I guess I'm kind of confused as to what exceptional element Palmer Luckey's actions were other than supporting Donald Trump. Which I get it, if you hate Donald Trump, and by that rationale, you find Donald Trump to be an exceptionally terrible human being and an exceptionally dangerous proposition for America, then the fact that he just supports Donald Trump is enough to turn you off. the fact that he is showing a political opinion. For which, I just want to ask a question. This is for, let's go ahead. I'm going to put the call out. I'm going to put the call out so everybody knows exactly who I'm talking to. Let's go. I'm putting my call out to the Hill Dogs. One more time. Let them hear it, Hillary. Hill Dogs. Hill Dogs, I want to ask you a question. If you are upset with Palmer Luckey, you are either asking for public figures to be honest or lie to you. Because I'm going to let you know, like most normal human beings, public figures have personal opinions about politics. And just by the numbers, half of them probably disagree with your opinion about politics, wherever you stand. So you just got to make a decision. Either you want public figures to be honest about where they're coming from, or you want them to lie to you because you want to compartmentalize your life because the toxicity of politics is too potent for you to keep to one side of the aisle in your brain. So the fact that Palmer Luckey made Oculus Rift, which is a tremendously popular platform, although personally I like the Vive. I don't have an Oculus. I have a Vive. The Vive is better because of room scale. But the Oculus is very, very popular. Either he's going to keep this to himself forever, or he is going to lie to you and say he does not have an opinion, or he keeps his politics to himself. By the way, most people who say I just like to keep my politics to myself are conservative, because it doesn't cost you anything to be publicly liberal. In fact, in many situations, it's better if you're publicly liberal. I mean, you had half the Avengers come out and do a totally nonpartisan ad where, you know, they said, you know, don't vote for Trump without saying don't vote for Trump. Because if Joss Whedon, Robert Downey Jr., and Mark Ruffalo all get together in a room, what do you think they're doing? Making Pepe memes? No! They love Hillary! They're Hill Dogs! This is, all right, here, I got this live clip of Mark Ruffalo and Joss Whedon talking to each other about that Avengers ad. That's live. I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to divulge my source, but they actually went on to say, they're Hill Dogs. They're Hill Dogging it. They love her. They're with her. So I don't, I mean, I just don't, I don't get what is wrong with him putting money into those memes. Now, if you subscribe to the notion that Pepe the Frog is now inextricably linked to white nationalism, then yeah, I can understand where wanting to put Pepe the Frog on a billboard, theoretically, this is just an example, would rub you the wrong way. That action element of it would be weird. I don't personally think that Pepe the Frog, though, is purely a symbol of white nationalism. At least, I think it would be a bummer, you know, because I feel like Pepe the Frog is more dynamic than that. I don't want to see it hijacked by a bunch of goof nuts who, you know, want to restore pride to the white race. They can have their own thing. Make your own meme. Steal Casper the Ghost. Do something else. I like Pepe. Let's get into the debates. Actually, no. Let's not get into the debates. Let's first talk about Anthony Weiner. I felt very, very strongly that when the Anthony Weiner, the latest Anthony Weiner sexting scandal, actually, no, the second to last Anthony Weiner sexting scandal broke, the one that eventually led to his divorce or separation and now in the process of divorce from his wife, Huma Abedin, who is Hillary Clinton's right-hand woman. I thought that this would be just red meat for Donald Trump. Catnip for Donald Trump. You just get it right in front of Donald Trump's face and he just bat it around and like with just his little paws. It would just look so adorable. He would just go like, oh, Anthony Weiner. It's about Wieners and his name is Weiner. And I could softly play into the conspiracy theory that Huma and Hillary are gay. Oh, I can't wait. I made a bet with chief political correspondent to BitTorrent News, Michael Shore. I said, over under 2.5 tweets about Anthony Weiner, and I got bubkiss, baby. I was shut out. I was absolutely taken out of the game by Donald Trump's uncharacteristic restraint. But finally, it took Anthony Weiner now being revealed to have had an illicit conversation with an underage girl. For which, man, like, now I understand. Before, with that last Anthony Weiner thing, I was like, man, how reckless do you have to be, like, texting nasty stuff to somebody who's, like, a stated Trump supporter? Because at any moment, that thing can go wrong, and she could just leak all that stuff to the Post, which is what happened. Well, ask and you shall receive, apparently. The clouds did part, and a Terry Gilliam illustrated figure of God popped out and threw this story on our laps. The reason why he didn't think it was dangerous to tweet somebody with different political affiliations is because she was the side piece to a 15-year-old. That dude was playing a way more dangerous game from the jump. I had a friend of mine text me and said, man, I would actually take a course on time management from Anthony Weiner. Like, I want to know just how he, like, fits it all into his day. Fits it all in is probably a bad thing to say, considering some of the texts he sent to that 15-year-old. Guy Maris says, not to diagnose remotely, but it does seem like an addiction at this point. Yeah, I think so. I think we've seen enough self-destructive behavior to say that he might have some element of a destructive compulsive instinct. Maybe. Hey, listen, I'm no Dr. Drew, but I might like to say this guy should be going through therapy to understand his feelings. Because this has become self-destructive on a level that few have seen. Just a little bit. I mean, can you understand this? If Anthony Weiner does not sext like he does, there is a very good chance he could be in the cabinet of the Clinton White House should Hillary win. It would not be crazy. I mean, it wouldn't have been crazy for him to be a part of the Clinton White House if he didn't get popped on the sexting stuff this year. Like, take everything that had happened before. The accidental DM with his junk. All the Carlos Danger stuff. Like, rehabbed from there. And then still put it in the White House. Like, that wouldn't have been nuts. I mean, you might have been able to see him if he pressed him up against his gym shorts as hard as he did his rod in those pictures. But still, it would not have been out of the realm of possibility. Well, Donald Trump finally came back. He finally, well, his spokesperson. It's really disappointing. Like, I wanted to say it because I wanted to talk a little bit more about Anthony Weiner. But, like, you know, it's just sad. It's just, like, I wanted Trump to get so excited about this, and he doesn't want to get excited about it. He doesn't want to get excited about it, you guys. So what did he say? Well, he said he wants Hillary Clinton to return donations. Return donations. I mean, come on. Like, he gave $550 to the Clinton campaign. You know, I'm sure it'll make its way back. I saw this on Twitter. I don't know if this is right, but apparently also Donald Trump himself has given like close to $5,000 to Anthony Weiner specifically in his campaign, which isn't that big of a deal because Trump's made a big point in talking about how he used to give money to everybody, and it underlines the fact that, you know, he is illustrating to everybody how corrupt the system is, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, so Trump's campaign comes out and says, you know, it's the cheapest way to be able to put. Well, here, let's just read the actual. Let's be fair. The Clinton campaign should immediately return all campaign contributions from Weiner. America has had enough of the sleaze that is Clinton Incorporated. Oh, wait, this is the beginning. The announcement by the FBI and the New York Police Department that they are investigating close Clinton ally Anthony Weiner's inappropriate relationship with an underage female is extremely disturbing, Deputy Communications Director Jessica Ditto said in a statement released Thursday night.
Well, thank you for the call, Jessica. How can I help you? 2ifbyt.com. Jessica Ditto. The golden microphone here in Oakland, California.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it just, I wanted so much more from you, Donald. Why don't you talk about this? Why are you being a real candidate? It's so frustrating. I want him to just make Weiner references and every, I want him to just go to like, you know, go to Grace Papaya in Manhattan and just be like, now here's a Weiner that won't get in trouble. Like, I want that. I want that kind of stuff. I want him to get in on this. Again, get in on this. Inappropriate if you read some of those texts back and forth between Weiner and that underage girl. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, who knows whether or not Hillary would do it. It's literally just a way to put underage texting and Hillary Clinton in a press release. Here's something else that you need to get in your life. That is the contender at thecontender.us. Hey, listen, there's going to be a lot of debates coming up. Everyone's going to talk about them. Everybody's going to watch them. Number one, you need to follow us on Twitter. Twitter.com/contendergame. We're going to be having a party on Monday night, and we are going to be tweeting along and doing some contests and stuff like that. Also, you're going to want to get on our mailing list this week. We put in, we did a little experiment. We had 62 of those television and movie president expansions, those 10 card expansions, and we sold out of them in like 3 hours on the mailing list. So you better get on that mailing list. I asked you guys to. If you didn't listen, then it is at your peril. But, you know, I'll tell you what, those went so well, they're probably going to do more things like it. So go ahead and check it out, because we're going to primarily be running on the mailing list there. Go ahead and sign up for the mailing list at thecontender.us. Again, thecontender.us. And, of course, buy stickers or DIAF. Go ahead and get some stickers in your life. They are $5, 7 stickers, vinyl, indoor, outdoor stickers. Man, I got one on the back of my phone. Works great to tag your cell phone. Look at that. I got my little swamp thing. All of them have the diamond logo. Go ahead and check it out. Use the diamond club symbol that is less than greater than on your keyboard, and I will sign a contender. I'll sign stickers, whatever you want. You want a signature? I will get one for you. All right, let's do our little pre-debate preview. We'll do a bigger debate preview on Monday, but let's just get into this. Two things. What does Donald Trump have in common with Dwayne Wade? In the chat room, we want our chat room. What do you guys have to? What do you guys think? You've had your time to think. What does Donald Trump, what will Donald Trump have in common with Dwayne Wade, basketball player Dwayne Wade? I'll let you guys think. Let's see if anybody gets it in the chat room. Dark Redeemer says they're both black. No, they're not both black. They're both arrogant douchebags. You better watch what happens. Listen, you do not talk about Dwayne Wade like this on this podcast. I don't care what jersey he has on now. He's a Heat lifer. They would both totally slam Ivanka. I mean, up for debate. Up for debate. Here is what we know for sure. They are both about to be on the business end of a withering stare. Loachman says, both of their mothers are named Martha. Stop it. It will never not be funny. Both people's name being Martha and them being best friends is always going to be very, very funny to me. They're both going to be on the business end of a withering stare from Mark Cuban. Because in 2007, the Miami Heat beat the Dallas Mavericks. Dwayne Wade's coming out party. Dwayne Wade hit a record, an NBA Finals record in free throws. And boy, was there a sour puss on the face of billionaire owner for the Dallas Mavericks, Mark Cuban. Oh, he was so angry. He was right up there in the stands, staring a black hole in Dwayne Wade's chest and face. But here is where Dwayne Wade is like Donald Trump, because Mark Cuban will be in the house at the debate on Monday. The Clinton campaign has said that they are furnishing him with the best seats they have access to, the closest seats they have access to, so Mark Cuban can just stare into the dark soul of Donald Trump. I shouldn't say dark soul. Dark soul's harsh. He can stare into the soul of Donald Trump. He can just look at him. Do you think Mark Cuban will make a funny face? I think he might. I think he might. I think he's literally there to try and throw Donald Trump off. I mean, that's not a question, right? Like, there's no reason why. There's absolutely no reason why he would be there unless the Clinton campaign is just trying to get into Donald Trump's head. In fact, I'm shocked it's Mark Cuban and not Rosie O'Donnell. Maybe Rosie O'Donnell wouldn't clear, you know, Secret Service requirements, right? Like, he's just there so he can just look at him with, like, a mean face. With the same face he had on as Dwayne Wade hit all those free throws back in 2007. And the Buck RI suggests that maybe we should get Mark Cuban a Money in the Bank briefcase, so we can run up on stage and cash it in for a chance to contend for the presidency. Now, if that happened, that would be a huge event. That would be Mark Cuban ran up with that gold briefcase and gave it to the referee. Lillian Garcia got in the mic and said, "This is now a triple threat match." That would be big. But it's unlikely, because we don't live in a world, as much as I lament it, that is governed by professional wrestling rules in our real life. No, we have to live in the dull, dreary, gray hellscape we call reality. But there is something, because I have had a vision. I have had a vision, my friends. I was reading this story. This is up here from Politico. Politico writes, "The Donald Trump team is building a psychological profile of Clinton for the debate. GOP nominee and his team are taking a more sophisticated approach to debate preparation than previously known." The lead, as written by Kenneth Vogel, Ben Schreckinger, Alex Insanet, and Darren Samuelson, goes as follows. Donald Trump's team has created a detailed analysis of Hillary Clinton's debate style, including her body language and verbal tics, with the goal of helping the GOP nominee exploit weaknesses during Monday's debate, according to three sources familiar with the Trump campaign. Now, immediately upon reading this article, which is well done, and basically the core of the article is that the Trump campaign would like for everybody to believe that Donald is just going to wing this, that he's just going to go up there and just kind of be him. But secretly, they're doing more prep than they want to let the Clinton campaign know that they are doing. But here's my vision, because I immediately saw something that could be gigantic. I saw a moment on Monday that could win Donald Trump the presidency. Something that would be devastating for Hillary Clinton. Something that would encapsulate everything that the Donald Trump campaign wants to highlight and would do damage to everything the Clinton campaign wants to secure. This would be the soundbite of all soundbites. This would go down in the record books as a there you go again level rhetorical mastery. It would be a nuclear explosion on the Hill Dogs. This is what I believe Donald Trump wants to do to Hillary Rodham Clinton at the first debate.
You see, everybody, I want the people at home to think about this. That's what Washington, D.C. does. The drive-by shot at the beginning with incorrect and incomplete information, and then the memorized 25-second speech that is exactly what his advisors gave him. See, Marco, the thing is this. When you're president of the United States, when you're a governor of a state, the memorized 30-second speech where you talk about how great America is at the end of it doesn't solve one problem for one person. They expect you to plow the snow. They expect you to get the schools open.
For those of you who don't remember, that is Chris Christie in his final debate absolutely destroying Marco Rubio. That was effectively the end of the Marco Rubio campaign. He never really recovered. That man was on a trajectory. He wanted to do the 3-2-1 strategy. Third place in Iowa, second place in New Hampshire, first place in South Carolina. And before that moment, he looked to be about on track to do it. He was polling in second in New Hampshire, and in the morass of the jockeying through South Carolina, it looked like he would have a shot, especially because a strong finish in New Hampshire by Marco Rubio would have hastened a departure by Jeb Bush. But yet, on that eve, Chris Christie did not train his bare-knuckle, brawling rhetorical skills on Donald Trump, the leader in the polls, but rather on Marco Rubio. And Marco folded like one of those Amazon Prime Fresh boxes. He buckled like a belt. What Chris Christie did was point out a rhetorical tick in Marco Rubio's way of talking. It immediately highlighted that he was processed. He was sanitized. He was politics as usual. Now, there he also highlighted inexperience and yada, yada, yada. That's not going to be the issue that Donald Trump wants to hit on. But he absolutely wants to hit on, this is what you get. It's what you have gotten. And what you will ever, forever, from now on, get if you elect this woman president. I am the only chance you have at a reset button. If you find what she just said to be stilted and awkward and not connect with you, good. You're not crazy. I'm telling you that that's weird. And also, that's how they do it. Politicians do it. I'm not a politician. I'm a businessman. Vote for me. My name is Donald Trump. If part of what they are doing is studying the verbal and rhetorical tics of Hillary Clinton, I believe that he is going to try to go for something like this. I believe he is going to have a few quotes that he knows that she says, right? And he is going to do what Chris Christie did to Marco Rubio. He is going to attempt to break down her messaging and explain to the people why it is stilted and why it is perfectly processed, triangulated talking points and not the real, authentic stuff that comes out of Donald Trump's mouth. Now, believe what he has to say or not, I think this is the strategy. And I believe that this is going to happen. So that is my prediction. That is my my seal it, lead pipe, lock of the week prediction that this is going to happen on Monday. And if Hillary Clinton is prepared for it, she will have a way to fire back in a way that Marco Rubio did not. Marco Rubio fired back by repeating the same quote over and over and over again, becoming Marco Robot, and eventually writing himself out of the campaign. If Hillary Clinton can respond in a way that says, no, you want to know what? Yeah, I think about what I say. Yeah, I wanted to appeal to the most amount of people because I'm trying to be the leader of everybody. And sure, I don't shoot from the hip in the way that the way that you do. But guess what? I've had the burden of having to lead people in my life. You have not. If she's got that in her hip pocket, in her pantsuit, then she'll be good. But if she looks frustrated, if she chokes, and that's the big blow, well, we got a problem. We got a real problem on our hands for the Hill Dogs. Because in general, I don't know exactly how much debates move the needle. But this is going to be a big spectacle. This is going to be a big opportunity for both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump to talk to a huge cross-section of America. And if this is something that winds up going Trump's favor, especially in a big, crystalline, sound-bitey kind of way, well, I think it could be serious, serious trouble for Hillary Clinton. Kind of trouble that you'd want to just head right to the bar. I mean, hell, it's like 10:47 here. I'm sure there's a bar open. I might head down there right now, man. I might just go down to the bar. I was drinking last night. I might as well just keep rolling into it, right? Just go right back there. You know? Start drinking. One shot, two shot, another beer. Let me get a bucket special. Six Yinglings in a bucket, all about it. Guzzle it, guzzle it, guzzle it. All of a sudden, daytime turns to dusk, and dusk turns to night. I'm meeting two friends, one on either side. Both of them are looking at Reddit. One's looking at reddit.com/r/the_Donald. The other one is looking at reddit.com/r/Hillary Clinton. I put my arm around either of them, and I say, hey, listen, buddies. I have been sitting on this stool getting straight lit since 11 a.m., but you want to know what? We got to dial this up. Let's say we all head down to SFO. I got plenty of miles to burn, and we get on the next flight out. Where are we going, you might say? Well, I'm going to tell you that we're going to North Carolina. That is a city. Charlotte is. It is a state that is in pain, but you want to know what? Here's one thing we can all agree on. We can all agree that it's Friday. We can all agree And it's time to get loose. Because on September 23rd, 2016, this is a North Carolina.
Get on the floor if you got that booty.
This is a New York Times Siena Bowl from September 16th to September 19th. 782 likely voters surveyed with a 3.6% margin of error. With 11% of the vote in North Carolina, welcome him to the stage.
Although not the debate stage.
It is Big Gary Johnson! 11%. How about this one? I want all my ladies, all my men's, pull out your pepes! Because we've got Donald J. Trump, 41%.
Get on the floor if you got that booty.
And finally, with 41%, a tie, it is Hillary Rodham Clinton. But did you see that between two ferns? Clinton! I'm totally better from pneumonia now. Clinton! Can you get me a step stool? Clinton! Tied in North Carolina. That's a kill shot state for Hillary. It is a must-have state for Trump. There have been a few other polls that have come out there that have Trump ahead by a little bit. The most recent one has Trump up by 5. But this is New York Times Siena Bowl. It's a pretty good bowl. It's got him dead even. Man, we are going to be tight. We're going to be tight rolling in to the final furlough of this election. Let's get into our emails. The Young American at gmail.com. Again, theyoungamerican@gmail.com. Paul in Tokyo writes, hey, let's say the elections genie makes you Lord High Imperator of presidential debates starting now. Okay. Well, he's got 3 questions for me. Although normally you ask genies things. Apparently this is a very, aggressive genie. He's going to ask me things. Number 1, which candidates do you invite to the debates? I would invite the 3 that we just said, and I would insist that I announce all of them. Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, and Gary Johnson. Jill Stein, I think, is good, but she's not – I mean, Gary Johnson's polling in double digits. Like, that's not a thing that happens all that often. Like, he deserves to be on the debate stage. If you are polling in double digits consistently, I believe that you need to be on the debate stage. Now, listen, the bar is set at 15. I don't think that it's wrong that he's not on there now, but I think that he would be an interesting – he is somebody that I think enough Americans want to hear from that he should have a spot on that stage. So those would be the 3. Why not Jill Stein? I just don't think that she's polling well enough. For me, my line is double digits. Gary Johnson's doing it. Jill Stein's not. Those are the 3. What is the first question that you would ask each candidate? For Donald Trump, it would be, would you like to take some Skittles out of this bucket? For Hillary Clinton, it would be, would you like a lozenge? And for Gary Johnson, it would be, look at my fingers, aren't they weird? Number 3, what twisted, clever, or ironic punishment will be or would you concoct for those candidates for evading your questions and or veering straight into their talking points? Air horn. I would just have one of those boat air horns and I would play it whenever whenever things would get too talking pointy. I would just go, meep. And then I would look around like somebody else did it. I would do it under the table. And I'd say, excuse me, if somebody else blows that air horn one more time, I am going to eject you. Okay? Please do not play the air horn. Go ahead, Candidate Trump. Well, you know, America is a back. That's what I would do. I would just do that the entire debate. Corey the Canadian writes, when Triple H left in 2001 to recover from his torn quad, he left as a heel, and when he returned, the crowd popped huge, and he was a baby face instantly. Hillary is sick and off camera for the week, leaving her to recover as a heel. Will she return as a face to square off against heel Trump for the WWF championship, I mean presidential race? Regardless, Hillary Clinton should emerge onto the stage to this theme song.
Time to play the game. Time to play the game.
Let's talk about that Between Two Ferns thing real quick. I mean, I made mention to it in the pole dance. I thought it was great, man. Zach Galifianakis is just so funny, and I love it when people who are very politically minded, like Zach Galifianakis, it very much is. Zach Galifianakis is like a serious political guy. Like when you hear him talk about it, he drains all comedy from his voice. But I like the fact that with Between Two Ferns, he didn't neuter his comedy, even though he very obviously wants Hillary Clinton to beat Donald Trump. He was mean to Hillary Clinton, which is the brand of that show. In fact, I liked it a lot with Hillary for two reasons. Number one, the show was as funny as it normally is, and Zach Galifianakis' character on Between Two Ferns was as mean as he normally was. But also, I think that that's just a better, more authentic version of Hillary. Like, kind of, I mean, cold is kind of a loaded gender term, right? But here's who I imagine Hillary Clinton is. I imagine Hillary Clinton is somebody that when the door closes and it's just her in her inner circle, she is making the meanest, funniest joke that you've heard that day. I think she's somebody who sees angles and is incisive and cold and funny about them. She just takes a chilled ice pick to things. That's who I imagined her to be. So that version of her on Between Two Ferns, I liked a lot more than, let's say, Hillary Clinton is your abuela, right? Like the idea that Hillary Clinton's like, oh, I just love my grandchild. Let me pull some cookies out. Don't give me that. Don't even give me that. You're a shark, Hillary. You've been in politics for 50 years. 50 years. You hate people. You want to rip people's heads off. You are a killer. You're a barbarian. You are Triple H. This is the
time to play the game. Time to play the game.
So I don't know about the heel face thing. I think that your mileage may vary on whether or not she's good or bad. Although there is some similar dynamic in play in that when a wrestler goes out with an injury, absence makes the heart grow fonder. So when they come back, it tends to be a very exciting event. Hillary Clinton had a very, very bad week. Distance time between now and then is only bound to help her. And if you look at some of the tracking polls that came out over the last 2 days, it seems as if her polling has started to, if not stabilize for sure, rebound just a little bit. Liam Appleby writes, on the last episode, Skittlebutt, you said that Iraq and North Korea are the kinds of places that have mandatory voting. Well, so does Australia. You said you can make people vote, but does that make their country better? No. Actually, I think mandatory voting is a part of the reason that our political parties are so much less polarized than Americans. U.S. presidential candidates have to spend a lot of time motivating their base to even bother to vote, so they have to make the election seem like an epic life-or-death struggle for the fate of the world by painting the other side as evil or crazy. We don't have the data to be certain. It's hard to run a double-blind experiment on countries, but I think that's at least a plausible argument to be made. Sure. I don't know, Liam. I mean, listen, this is if the rest of the election coverage is a subreddit, we are the shitpost. So I don't know enough about Australia's electorate to really make an informed decision on it. And obviously everybody's mileage may vary. What is good for the goose is not always good for the gander. But in my opinion, a mandatory voting law basically just means that you could be fined for not voting. I don't think that it's going to get any more people out of the house. Because, by the way, I do know enough about Australian voting that all anybody was talking about on Election Day was how there was some, you know, organization that was grilling sausages next to polling stations. Why? So it would get people out to vote so they didn't have to issue citations for not voting. Or I don't know if you issue citations. I don't know. I mean, because if there's no penalty, then what's the point of the law? Maybe Australian politics is a little lighter, a little less, you know, life or death than American politics are. But also, that's kind of what's rad about American politics, right? I don't want to let go of the life or death. I like the life or death. Palmer Luckey probably wishes it wasn't quite so life or death. David Podnar, he writes, after listening to you suggest that The Rock could be the next president, he's got a suggestion for himself. Let's go ahead and get into that right now. He's got just a list of qualifications for somebody that he thinks. Again, the issue that we were looking at here was somebody that could just take over the presidency for 4 years and just not try to push his own agenda. Just be a game manager. And the way that you would get that person elected is if it was somebody who is just universally liked. Well, Dave has a little bit of a different perspective on it. He thinks that there's somebody out there that could really actually just be America's favorite candidate, that actually is right on the issues for a majority of America. David says, do you want a candidate that is pro-gun? What? Pro-gay rights? What? Pro-military and veteran? What? A person who is in with Hollywood and Texas rednecks? What? Well, he's talking about none other than Stone Cold Steve Austin! My God! Stone Cold! Stone Cold! Stone Cold! If you listen to his podcast, he's basically a libertarian, but unlike Gary Johnson, he has a presence on air who is not going to mess. He has a presence on air and who is going to mess with Steve Austin. It's a fair point. And finally, we do have one tortured analogy. This is the GoBot election. Most years, politicians smoothly transition from the wings of their party in the primaries towards the middle of the general, like an exquisitely manufactured transformer. This year, Hillary and Donald have clunkily transitioned into bargain bin GoBots. Remember, send all of your email to theyoungamerican@gmail.com. And we always love your tortured metaphors. We are coming up into the weekend, so I very much expect to get some drunk emails. Politics, 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 politics. Of course, you can buy The Contender at thecontender.us. Music provided by Valesco and Trop Killers. You can follow me, Justin R. Young, everywhere. If you are on Snapchat, Justin R. Young, just tell me your favorite wrestler. I want to know your favorite wrestler. Download archive episodes of this show's at BonerWars.com. Remember, if you are in the Michigan area, vote Terrence Guido Guerin for state representative. And we will see you next week on Debate Monday. Some shows talk about politics. Others talk about politics. Politics is the only show that talks about politics. I love you. Have a good weekend.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.